Conference record has joined the conference.
Okay, great. We're going to start our topical call tonight on support groups, and I'm really glad that all of you are able to come. We've got a wide variety on the call tonight. We've got families, we've got providers, and we've got some self-advocates as well. So it's quite a diverse group, and we're really happy to hear from you all. You all have a handout of the slides that I'm going to talk about, and some of them I'm going to go over fairly fast because we are on a limited amount of time, and I want to make sure that you all, if you have questions, that you're able to ask any questions that you'd like. I may not have the answer, but we'll try. This presentation, actually, we put together from some information that we had, but we also have some great counterparts in other parts of the state, and on this particular one, we received some assistance from our friends in Rhode Island that have been doing this a lot longer than we have and have been great mentors to us at Family Voices of North Dakota. So I just want to put that up there as well as thanks to them for their help with that. So just a little bit about Family Voices. For some of you that may not be familiar with Family Voices, in a nutshell is we are a chapter of Family Voices National, and there is the grassroots network of families and friends of advocates of children with special health care needs. And basically, this is their old mission statement, actually, but we are very concerned that services be family-centered, community-based, comprehensive, culturally competent for all children and youth with special health care needs and adults as well. So we want to make sure that families and self-advocates are decision-makers at all levels of healthcare, and that supports essential partnerships between families and professionals. So we follow much of, if not all, of that mission statement. And then we also have the North Dakota Parent-to-Parent Program. We're funded through the Maternal and Child Health Bureau to be a health information and education center for North Dakota. And then we also have the North Dakota Parent-to-Parent Program that accompanies that. So, any questions on that at all? Hearing none. Our key goals tonight are really to build confidence in you all in starting support groups or helping others to start a support group. Hopefully, we'll be able to enhance maybe some listening skills and build upon some of the skills that you already have. And then hopefully, we'll also be able to identify some strategies to enhance support groups that you may already have in existence or would like to start. So I don't know if the next slide was talking about bingo, but I think in the handouts that I gave to you, that might be if you do start a support group, the bingo game is one to do kind of as an opener. We also frequently use a M&M game, and I'm happy to share that with you all, too, as kind of an icebreaker for any support groups that you may want to start. And in other support groups that we have at Family Voices have helped with and helped others with, a lot of times we'll do a getting to know you type of a activity by sharing yourself and your story and then asking others to share their story too. One thing that the next slide is slide five. We have been involved with a lot of agencies and consortiums that do a lot of work together. And this next slide where it says welcome, a lot of times these are some very solid rules that come up very frequently at the meetings that we attend, and it's something that we've kind of adopted at Family Voices of North Dakota too, as far as some rules that we have for our meetings or in some of our support groups. So those would be that it's our show, which means that everybody that's in attendance it's their show together, not necessarily the person that's calling the meeting, but everybody that's in attendance. And everyone that comes to our meetings isn't equal. No relevant topic is excluded. If something should come up, it's a relevant topic and we'll discuss it. And no discussion is ended. So even tonight after you attend the support group topical call, there may be something that triggers in your mind that that, you know, maybe it could be added to this presentation or write it down for something that you may want to try. So really no discussion is ended. We want everybody to respect each other's opinions and respect the time for each other, and usually silence is agreement. And we also want to make sure that there's a non-attribution. So this isn't our Family Voices training. This training is shared with you all so that you can also help others to start support groups. So, and in the meetings that we have, non-attribution also means for us that everybody is again equal, and it's not one person's thing or another person's thing. It's our thing together. So, okay. Any questions on that? Do you like those goals at all? It's a lot of meetings that we go to have those rules. So one little slide that one of my colleagues, Missy Bronco, added to this is, life is like cooking. It all depends on what you add and how you mix it. Sometimes you follow the recipe, and at other times you're creative. And so it is with support groups, too. Sometimes you follow a recipe, and sometimes you have to be creative to keep everybody engaged. When you're starting a support group, one of the things that we've always been advised to do is to kind of identify what are individual strengths. Everybody comes to the table that is involved in support groups that, you know, one person may be better than another person at doing things. So kind of identify the group's strengths. Also identify strengths of your family and the family as a whole, of the folks that are coming to the support group, and the strengths of your community as well. The other thing you may want to look at is, what are the individual challenges? What challenges exist in your family with a support group? Is it going to be, you know, hard to get away, that kind of thing? And then what possibly are the challenges in your community that you may have to overcome with developing support groups or with existing ones? There is a difference between leadership and facilitation. If you lead, you're able to offer encouragement and follow kind of a predetermined course or direct instruction in building a set of skills. But when you facilitate, you make it easier for people to participate in really a more casual and less structured environment. So you'll have to decide when you're developing that support group, if you're going to have leaders, who's going to be the facilitator, and how are we all going to bring this together. A lot of times support groups are built around stages of adaptation. And those four stages are really surviving, searching, settling in, and separating. So a lot of times if families are in survival mode, you need to identify what to do to keep going when you're feeling completely overwhelmed because something totally is out of control. And for the first time through that survival process is really difficult and long. So some ways to ease that surviving process is really to understand that your feelings are normal. Try to make more time for yourself and use a support system, whether that be a support group of some kind, or if it's family support or church support. We hope that families will do that. A lot of times families are also searching, or self-advocates too, that they're searching, and they some play leapfrog right into the searching stage and some don't. And what do you do when you're looking for answers for your child? Excuse me, I'm sorry. And you will probably have periods of searching during your whole life for different resources and information, and sometimes that's what brings people together as well. You may become aware of, you know, different things, and you might get angry at things, that life might not be fair, or that you devote all your time and energy and thoughts to your child, that someone will, you know, that nobody is there for you. So, that, you know, people are searching, and they are wanting to get together with other people that may be having the same similar issues. So we'll, and then we have folks that just get in, they see the world for what it is, and seeing yourself for who you are, and and then wanting to help other people as well, so that, you know, there's different components of support groups. But we know that some essential facilitation skills that are needed for any support group is leadership, respect, learning and listening, verbal and listening skills, and flexibility. So with leadership, you want to have a belief in a subject, or you deal with diversity, self-confidence. You want to be with flexibility, maintain focus. You might need to have some controlled rules for your support group. What happens if the leader of the support group that you're developing or maybe in existence gets ill or decides to move? Who's going to take over that support group then? Have some plans in place and establish rules of what are some do's and don'ts of your support group. Have some unconditional positive regard for the group. Make sure that it's non-judgmental. Listen closely and don't allow others to interrupt, because sometimes that can happen with folks, that one person in the support group can take over a whole conversation for the whole evening. Make sure that there's a lot of, with your facilitation skills, that there's a lot of open and positive body language, asking a lot of open-ended questions and repeating back what was said to people to make sure that it was understood. And then, again, flexibility. How do you modify in a crisis so that you can, and then to be accommodating so that people are able to attend all, you know, at the same time. So we have a slide on slide 19 of being an active listener and what that means. And I know a lot of you probably have gone through these before, but it's like having supportive body language, asking responsive, reflecting what other people are saying, asking for clarification, having empathy, and many of you have gone through those before. Some of the we have a slide there on active listening techniques, on an encouraging statement, how do you convey interest to the people, and how do you keep people talking, that kind of thing. So I'll let you guys look at that on your own. You want to make sure that when you are developing a support group, that everyone is able to participate, that everyone has something to give or learn, and that everyone helps to shape the training, and that there's a continuous feedback loop that allows people to share openly opinions and bring that back. And that's where that first welcome slide that we showed about non-attribution, that's where a lot of those kind of connect. And also with that, we sent you a handout on some storytelling guidelines and to kind of identify if you may want to start. So, okay, we're on slide 22. Also with support groups, make sure, absolutely positive, without a doubt, that you maintain confidentiality in that support group. You want to respect the privacy of the families or the self-advocates that you're interacting with. You want to make sure to build trust, not only with families, but with the community as well, and build relationships with families who need help and with members of the community. So really, what does it mean? Confidentiality means it means to contain information. The unauthorized disclosure of information could pose a threat or harm to someone. So, you know, technically, like I say, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. It's the same with confidentiality. And you really need to err on the side of caution. It's just about always the best that you can is, don't discuss what happened in that support group with others around you, except, you know, it was a great support group, but don't be sharing information outside of them. Because some things are just better left unsaid and not repeated, and building a reputation for discretion in your community will serve your team and your support group well, and you want to make sure that this reputation will bring more families to you because if there's one bad incident, it could really cost the team for a long time or the support group. Listening. Think of a time in your life when you needed someone to listen to you. It could be real recent, or it might be something from childhood. Maybe it was a problem you wanted to talk about. Maybe it was something you were angry about, or maybe it was just something exciting in your life. I want you to think about that for a minute. Who did you choose to talk to, and why did you choose that person? So these are just some things I want you to think about, and if you want to, you can write them down. Who did you choose to talk to, and why did you choose that person? And what qualities did this person have that made him or her a good listener? How did it feel to you to be listened to? Then I want you to think about, did you ever have an experience when you wanted to be listened to, but the other person was not a good listener? Then I want you to think about, what did that person do that made him or her into a poor listener? And then think about, why is it sometimes difficult for people to be good listeners, and what are those barriers to listening? So think about those for a little bit, and then kind of identify with your support group, what are the qualities that you would like to see happen with your support group, in an existing support group or one that you would like to develop? So the next few slides are really some tips for effective listening. Work through feelings and find solutions to help out with that. Ask appropriate open-ended questions. Make sure that you're really patient and allow plenty of time. A lot of times for self-advocates or even families, a lot of things are still very raw and things might upset us that are very fresh, and a lot of times, you know, things can get real emotional at times. So be patient. Sometimes it's going to take longer than other times for people to express their feelings. And we want to make sure that you don't interrupt, don't prepare answers while the person is talking. Take mental notes, because writing notes can really be distracting, and it's like, why are they taking notes on what I'm saying? So make sure that that's something that's done. Maybe avoid premature conclusions about, you know, what somebody is saying. Have a desire to hear what's being said to be helpful. And then the next slide also goes through some, you know, empathy kind of things, recognizing people's feelings, etc. So some examples of empathy is, one example might be me saying I'm really frustrated with the school my child attends because they think all of his problems are my fault. And one, you know, somebody in the support group could say, I understand that you're angry because the school is blaming all the problems your child has on you, et cetera, kind of restating what they were saying, just an exercise. So also realize in developing a support group or a network that it's evolving, it's not stagnant, and it's something that I think all support groups struggle is to keeping it fresh and keeping it going. Even Family Voices, we often at times we struggle a little bit, many times, about, you know, how do we keep families engaged, what do we need to do next, are we looking at the family surveys, it's ever evolving, as it should be, because, you know, families are our main support, and we need to keep growing to do all that we can to help families. Normalize experience and let participants learn really to strategize and solve issues on their own. Sometimes, I'm just as guilty as others, is I always want to jump in there and try to solve the problem for people, and I think sometimes they really need to. Suggestions are great, but they need to do it on their own. So really there are some group development stages of support groups and informing the support group. You might want to ask, why are we here? What is the purpose of the support group that you want to begin or that's in existence? storming, sorting out process and bidding for control or who's got power. You know, sometimes in the initial phases, those kind of things will happen. Norming is kind of the desire to help others, kind of an aversion to conflict. High interpersonal support, you kind of get into that, receptive to others' needs and seeking feedback. So you get into kind of a routine. And then there's performing, which is really the maturity and the mutual acceptance of the group. It's open. There's a lot of trust. There's good listening. But usually these are kind of the stages that happen with the support group as they're being started. So if you're going to develop a support group of or a group of some kind, you really want to start with those that you're bringing together, and we gave you a handout on that as well, is really to create some house rules. You want to make sure that there's healthy group participation. You want to recruit and maintain attendance, so you might meet another self-advocate, or you might meet another family, or some of the providers may have their own support group and want to encourage families to attend as well. Have opening and closing statements. You might want to alternate those amongst people that are going to be of the group to take turns with that. And then, you know, evaluate the group periodically to see, are we meeting the goals that we started off with? If not, let's take a step back and relook at it. So we know that starting support groups takes a lot of teamwork. There's going to need to be regular meetings if you start those, because if you make, you know, so that people have set times, you want to make sure that there's a primary contact person. And consider, do people need transportation to get to your support group? And is that something that needs to be discussed when you're developing it? Do people need child care services, and is that going to be present an issue for the support group? And then never forget to celebrate milestones. I think we don't do that enough. A lot of good things are going on out there, and I don't think we often celebrate the fact that in maybe small town Cullom, North Dakota, near me, there might be a new support group for families, but it's so very needed, and we don't celebrate those things. Some support groups, self-help principles. These are some of the self-help principles that that we have found that all help is self-help. Be willing to give and receive help. Let go of negative and embrace positive. Make sure that you believe in oneself. Identify needs, set goals, and seek and ask for help. And don't be afraid to seek and ask for help at all. So you want to think about the environment, speaking and listening. Are you going to have speakers for your support group? Is it going to be a speak and listen night, or, you know, like a topical call kind of a thing? Or is it going to be a group discussion, and are you going to move into leadership kind of support as well to help people develop their leadership skills? So really the ideal group, we think, is that there's consistency, that you develop trust in that group, that there's support, empathy, respect, that it's a safe place. It's a safe place for self-advocates to come and talk. It's a safe place where families can come and talk. And usually, you know, money's getting real tight. If we can try to get away with no fees, that would be great for families, because it's, you know, life is expensive enough. So successful groups really kind of come together for a common reason or an issue. You know, maybe for some of the self-advocates that might be out there, there might be something that's happening with some of the services that they're receiving. So they're coming together to talk about it and maybe come up with a plan on what to do about it. Or for families, it might be around a diagnosis, or it might be around just some self-help kind of skills, or to increase parenting skills. A lot of times participants are willing to share information and are willing to receive it as well. People really need a safe place to talk about difficult subjects, I think. So, and there's usually a mutual demand. A lot of support groups that are successful really do a lot of individual problem solving. And, you know, if they're coming together over a common purpose, like, you know, a service is not available or that kind of thing, or support is needed here, it's not around a common principle, but there's strength in numbers. There's a lot of times, even like some of the things that have happened with our leadership institutes and some of the trainings that we have provided, there a lot of families come together over a common purpose, and it's been amazing to see what has happened and come out of the leadership institutes and some of the supports that's been out there. You want to make sure also that you're using people-first language for any group, that's for a family or a self-advocate. So you want to say child with a disability instead of a disabled or handicapped child. You want to say person with cerebral palsy instead of, you know, he's palsy, he's a spastic, he's whatever. There, you know, that you guys know the golden rule about people first language, so I don't want to talk to the choir about that, but that's really important for our self-advocates and our families. And whether you're a family that, you know, if it's a family support group or if it's an adult support group, you want to make sure that it's family-centered. So I just thought that was a cute slide with the kitten, with the fish. Family-centered support is really support that's offered to the family as a whole rather than to the child with a disability alone. And it's based on the priorities and concerns that are identified by the family rather than by the professionals. And it recognizes the pivotal role of the family. And these principles would also apply to self-advocates, but they would be called patient-centered support. So these same principles would apply, but just take that and say patient-centered instead of family-centered. So it recognizes, again, and respects the pivotal role of the family, of children with special health care needs. It promotes normal patterns of living at home and in the community, and that the views of the parents and the professionals as equals are in a partnership committed to excellence at all levels of health care. So on the next slide, it shows the 10 really components of family-centered care or patient-centered care. It acknowledges that family is the constant in a child's life. It builds on family strengths, supports the child in learning about and participating in his or her care or decision-making, honors cultural diversity, recognizes the importance of community-based services, promotes an individual and development approach, encourages family-to-family and peer support, and it supports youth as they transition into adulthood, developing policies around family-friendly, family-centered settings, and celebrates those successes. So we know that the effect of disability or having a child with a special health care need on affects mother-father relationships, single parents, step-parents, grandparents, and brothers and sisters. And we know that if it affects them all in different ways and how they're able to cope. So, which is another reason why support groups are so very important. In some of your support group settings, you may come up against some challenging situations. I'm going to go back to some of the effect of disability on special health care needs. In our personal situation, when our children were diagnosed with their diagnoses, I was able to jump right in there, but Dad kind of lagged along a little bit. It took probably a good year and a half before he was even near at the same place that I was at. So if you have in your support groups, as you're developing them, just know that everybody in that support group is in a different place. Dads may be in a different place than moms. They may be the lead, and mom might be lagging along, or grandparents may not be accepting of the diagnosis at all. So everybody's got a little bit going on. We have another presentation that we do that's called The Dance of Partnership, Why Do My Feet Hurt So Much? And it's very similar because providers come with a hat, families come with a hat, and we want to make sure that we're all there together to support one another. So anyway, some of the challenging situations that may come up is dealing with participants who are dominating or argumentative. They might be overly helpful or ramble on, or there might be sidebar conversations going on, or they might talk that's real muddled, or they might be very shy or withdrawn. So think about some of the things that you might be able to do in those challenging situations, and I think we have a handout for that as well. The other thing is to be prepared for issues that may impact the whole group. Somebody may be a part of your group that has been a victim of domestic violence. You might have, someone that might be going through some substance abuse, or someone that might have to be at that support group and they don't want to be at that support group, or you might also have somebody that has gone through child or sexual abuse. You need to be prepared for some of the things that, you know, if it's going to be a support group where you're sharing feelings and emotions, that these may be some of the outside issues that are also affecting people. So when you're building your support group and growing your team, do invite all families to events, unless it's a support group that's built around a certain disability, make sure to invite all self-advocates or all families to the event, no matter what their disability. Include all family members if you want to, parents, grandparents, aunt, uncle, siblings, if that's something that you would like to do with your support group. And do have all ages of self-advocates, teens, young adults, older adults. A lot of times, even for self-advocates, you are a great mentor to those that are coming up after you. So it's good to invite them as well. And be positive. I took this slide from our parent navigator team training that we have, so that's why it says do tell others about the navigator team. But if you're developing a support group, make sure you let others know about it as well so that they can also come and attend and help you spread the word. A lot of you will need to decide, depending upon the support group that you have, if it's just a family support group or if it's a self-advocate support group. Working with, do you want to involve the professionals that families work with? And I think, it's great to do so. So do invite professionals to be a part if you'd like. Invite them to speak with the group. Invite them to assist the group in fundraising if they'd like to, and build relationships with professionals. That's a lot of times how things get done, is that partnership with the providers that that you're working with. So you make sure that you look at that when you're developing your support group. You also want to make sure that you have some evaluation tools. How well does the group interact together once you're getting started? Do individuals show respect when there is a difference of opinion? Are you able to discuss taboo topics? And what happens if you do discuss something that might be a little taboo? Are group members empathetic to each other's issues? Do you have a demand for knowledge about the subject matter? Does the group show support when a member has a difficult action to take? And are there individuals as well as group problem solving, and do members plan on returning? Every once in a while, I think it's good for all support groups to do a little self-evaluation. In some cases, we can help if people are trying to get a support group started. We can help with some of that. You may make good use of brochures, take advantage of community events to get involved. If you do start talking to media, target families, be sure to use simple language with everyone so that they can identify and understand. Communicate time and place of details of an event or meeting in a clearly defined way. And have a designated person to take pictures, too. Really, some do's and don'ts of public relations is always use people-first language, especially with the public. Make sure your time, date, location is very clear. If you're going to invite people to your support groups, that might be the press or the media, get your brochures out to the community. Use great pictures. Use your information in a timely way. Media can really help get your word out there and be useful in helping people understand some of the reasons that you might be building the support group and the issues that people with disabilities face in the community. You may have some real positive stories about families who experience disabilities that provide good public relations, so you want to make sure that you're also advertising in that way as well. Some resources that are out there from the family organizations that may be helpful is of course Family Voices. We have lots and lots of resources on our website that would be helpful for some of the support groups that are available. We've got 2 pages of publications, so those are all there. We also have Big Tent, which is very similar to Facebook, which is part of our parent-to-parent program. Our toll-free line, families can contact us at any time, as well as providers and we're more than happy to provide any, or try to provide the information that that families and providers need. We also have a New Beginnings guide, and that's kind of there as a resource guide. It's on our website, and we also have many available in a hard copy as well. The other family organization that you may want to look at is for resources as well is Pathfinders, which is our parent center for families and schools. They offer information and training for North Dakota families of children and youth with learning difficulties ages birth to 26. They do a lot of education on the special ed process and enhance student achievement through parent involvement. So that's another great resource for families. And then we also have the Federation of Families for Children's Mental Health. They are funded through the Center for Mental Health Services. They have a statewide family-run network. Carlotta McCleary is the director for that for North Dakota. And then Deb Gendro is in Fargo, and Becky Sievert is also in Bismarck. Pathfinders is in Minot, and the director for that now is Kathy Harstead. And, again, they have also a wide range of resources available for families. Support groups, we have collected over time a lot of support group information across North Dakota. I think it's pretty current, so if anybody's interested in that, we can share that document with you. We've just been tracking it on a Word document. It's nothing fancy, but we could sure share that with you. Other resources might also be look at your school organizations or your PTA and things like that. Are there things that you could also kind of tack on to other types of resources to help you? There might also be some of the other nonprofit organizations such as March of Dimes, United Way, that may be able to help get some funds as well to get you started for resources. And then the state agencies also might have some resources available for you for your support groups, either with a guest speaker or that kind of thing. So make sure that you're looking at all your resources as well. And I know that I ran through this fairly fast, but I wanted to make sure that we left time for any questions and answers. But, you know, again, my name is Deneen. There's our toll-free number and the office number. Does anybody have any questions at all? I talked a lot.
Deneen, I do.
Go ahead.
With the part in regards to education, what support groups besides like PTA and that is out there for the children that are on IEPs when there's a difficulty with the school and the transitioning and everything like that?
Well, I know that in Fargo they're starting, it's called SEPTA. It's special. Okay. They're trying to get a special ed PTA started in Fargo. And I know there's one going on in Bismarck, and I can get that contact information for you, Karen. And then,
I would appreciate it.
And then also there's a FEET group as well, that it's a Families Education Enhancement Team, I think, in Fargo, that's working with both families and providers. But outside of that, I don't know what else might be in Fargo, Karen.
Okay.
But I can do some checking.
I would appreciate it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any comments? Did you get kind of what you thought you were going to get out of tonight?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. That's good.
A lot of great information.
Good. How do the self-advocates feel? Hi, Carmen. Did she hear me?
Hi.
Now you're going to say hi?
I say hi.
Hi, Carmen.
I had us on mute.
Okay.
I think it was quite an eye-opener to some of them here as to how to get one started, what needs to be done before we just get together and do it. There are some things, of course, we'll have to adapt.
Yeah.
But they did have one comment. Instead of being called patients, they all said they're people.
Right. Patient-centered care and family-centered care are medical terms.
So,
we went through that. But
I understood what it was, but when they heard that, they thought, oh, we're not patients, we're people.
No,
so,
yeah, it's just a medical term, but we want to make sure that it's centered on the person.
Right. But that was just one thing that they kind of picked up right away, so
I'm glad they did, because next time I'm going to say person-centered, and I should have right away.
Hey. So
thank you for pointing that out, you guys.
Ahead of us, so, but it was, I think it was a starting point for us. So
good. Good. Does anybody that's on the phone, do they want to volunteer any information? Like, Julie, are you looking to start a support group in Minot for some of the Eddy families?
I'm not, but just wanted to be there for support for Hands and Voices as well as Family Voices if there's people interested in the Minot area.
Awesome. That's good news. Becky, are you looking to do something with child care providers or with other families?
I guess my biggest thing was I need to find something for us providers out there.
I agree, Becky. I'm a daycare provider as well.
And I guess the family isn't very on board with the one boy that is in my care that's autistic. We just found out the last couple months, and it's kind of a struggle trying to get them to get on board for therapies and to actually realize what's going on now. I mean, he's not even three, so, I mean, it's all coming very fast and stuff, but I just feel like there's a line that it needs to be crossed, but it can't be crossed yet.
Yeah, right.
So I'm kind of in limbo.
So you're looking to start maybe something with child care providers so that you all can support one another in situations like that.
Yeah.
I completely understand where you're coming from, Becky, because when a home provider is group licensed, we can't take by the number of kids or count the child's age in our ratio for points. We have to go at their functioning age, and I had a similar situation, and the parent actually pulled the children out.
Really? See, we haven't noticed a whole lot of where he's not developing, you know. I mean,
you guys, can I stop you?
Yep.
We shouldn't probably discuss that.
Okay.
Okay. Jeannie, are you looking to start a support group?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, we were going to start one over at our office and stuff with whether it's with TBI people.
Okay.
And their families and stuff. We've tried starting it up, but, you know, they come and then they don't, and then we might have one or two people that show up, and we just don't know how to go about starting it to get it so people are showing up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, and it's that consistency that we have to...
To do, yeah.
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 So it's been helpful, though. I've got a lot of good ideas.
Good.
So thank you.
Yeah, Pam, how about you? Are you planning on starting a support group?
Yeah. Hi, Denine. I do have a support group for individuals with hearing loss in Fargo at the present time. We meet at the Moorhead Public Library every other month. But I'm looking to start support groups in other communities around the state. So thank you for the information. It's very helpful. And I'm looking forward to, you know, being able to provide more support for individuals with hearing loss.
Great. Are you looking at adults?
Yes. I am the coordinator of adult services for the deaf for the state of North Dakota. My office is here in Devil's Lake at the School for the Deaf. So my work right now is primarily with adults, but the support groups will be open to any age of individuals or their families.
Okay, that'd be great because, well, Julie, perhaps you and Pam ought to get together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be a kind of a cool transition kind of, for some families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, anyway, good thought. How about you, Dion?
You know, I'm trying to I guess one of the reasons I was interested in this is because I have a son that's 2.5 with Down syndrome, and I was told that we had a support group in Minot, but we have never met. And so I definitely see a need. I'm rather busy myself, and so the idea of taking on it all by myself is a little overwhelming, but I have facilitated support groups of different kinds through my professional career, and so I definitely think that one is certainly needed, but I think it comes down to trying to find enough people together to kind of pool resources so that it's manageable.
Sure. Yeah. Do you have the contact information for the group that's up there?
I do.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And I don't know when the last time they've met, so but I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Well, that is kind of what we had for this evening. And now, when you are driving or laying in bed at night and you can't sleep and you're thinking about different things, if there's things that we should add to this, or if there's other information that you may need, make sure you give us a call and provide us that feedback. We're Family Voices is not about me or one individual. It's about all the families and the providers together working collaboratively to assist children and families with special health care needs. So I thank you all for spending a beautiful evening outside and inside with me. So thanks a lot. And I hope you'll be on other topical calls with us. So thanks.
Thanks so much, Sunny.
Okay,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Denine. Night, Denine.
Goodbye.
Bye.